Welcome to our special segment, Pioneer Pulse, with Jacqueline
and Chaya, where we check the vitals of life and birth in rural America.
Hello.
Hello. So,
we're here to hear all about your trip. So, how
My
was
trip
your
to
trip?
Denver.
Yeah.
It was good. It was the first time I had been away from Silas for that long. It was a whole week. So, I was more worried about what they were going to do. Well, it's gone, but they survived. They had lots of fun man and boy time. Like, they drove around in the car. They watched trains. They went to dinner and got French fries. Yeah, they were always doing something. So they had a great time. But it was good. It was nice to be able to go do something that was just, like, for me. And to meet a lot of really cool people in the birth world. And it was really interesting because you and I have been talking about this with where we live and just with the, like, whole, I guess, culture of midwifery. But the whole theme this year was collaboration over competition and talking about, you know, there were a lot of midwives there who were currently licensed, who spent decades practicing without a license, and some that were still practicing without a license, and that were talking about, like, you know, the difficulties they had with the communities that they serve, even some that were, you know, licensed but practiced differently from other licensed midwives. It was just interesting to hear, like, it didn't really matter whether they were licensed or not, because there was still so much, like, infighting and so much, like, gatekeeping and all this, like, sister wounding. And so it was really cool that was the theme of the conference.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it's crazy to hear all of the things that people go through, whether they're licensed or not. There's, like, this hierarchy and this infighting, and, you know, it creates this horrible environment where people burn out so fast.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I heard a lot of people talking about was burnout. You know, I talked to some midwives who practiced for a few years and then they went into something else, like teaching or advocacy work, but a lot of them, you know, went to school for longer than they actually practiced.
Wow.
They did a series of photos of midwives who had practiced for 25 years or longer. And I think the one that was the 25 year photo was 11 midwives. And they did a 30 year photo, and that was 35 years. And then they did a 40 year, and it was 2.
Wow.
And I was just like, it's amazing, but you just saw it dwindle because it's so hard. It's such hard work whether you're looking at, like, regulations and state imposed laws and restrictions, or whether you're just looking at, like, what the culture is where you are, and or if there even is one. You know, if you don't have anybody to support, if you don't have a backup of any, you know, if you don't have anybody to come assist at a birth, if you need somebody there to help, or if you need somebody to cover you because you have, you know, like, I missed a birth because I had COVID, you know, and there's no one to back me up. So it was just interesting listening to midwives that were from bigger areas that were still dealing with the same issues in areas that you and I would probably think of as having, like, lots more resources. But it seems like the question is, does it have as much to do with where you are? Or is it something that is kind of fundamentally broken about this profession, the way that it currently exists, you know?
Yeah.
So it was really interesting. And
what was the vibe like there with everybody? Like, especially with this topic, like, what did it feel like?
I think it was, people were really friendly and warm, and I think they just felt like this was a place that it was safe for them to talk about these types of things. Like, one night, at the Friday night, which was the opening of the conference. So there were skills and drills for 2.5 days. So Wednesday, Thursday, and half of Friday were skills and drills. So that was literally just, people were coming to the stations and they were learning things like IV cannulation and breech maneuvers and shoulder dystocia and estimated blood loss and suturing and things like that. So they had, like, 3 days to go through all these stations. And then Friday night was the opening of the conference, and they did a ritual. It was called the We Belong ritual, and it was a circle. Everybody was invited to participate, and they stood in a circle in this big, conference, or this big, banquet room. And people just stepped into the circle and said, these are the things that I've experienced. And, whether it was, a stillbirth or, a birth that was, a resuscitation that was really traumatic, or, community things, I was persecuted by my community for decades, and, or I practiced without a license, and that's, whatever that is. And then, they were invited, everyone else in the room was invited to step into the circle and be like, I have had that happen to me too. So it was like, you're able to be, you were recognizing that, even though maybe in your community you feel really alone, that there are other midwives there that were having the same sort of issues or experiencing the same things. So it was like, you didn't feel like people were judging you, because you were like, oh my gosh, there's 30 other people in this room that have had this thing happen. So that's how they opened the conference. And I feel like that would kind of created an air of people being able to say things more freely about what their experiences were. And there's powerful. A lot of consensus throughout, even people working, in midwifery education that are talking about the problems with the accrediting agencies like NARM and MEEC, and how they're really creating this imperfect system and how frustrating it is. So it's interesting. I'm from the standpoint of watching people who are navigating that, a lot of people seem really dissatisfied. So I don't know if that's going to change anything. I mean, it's nice to see people being this is not meeting our needs at all. So I'll be interested to see in the future how that all plays out, because that was another thing, is the midwives that were newly graduated and newly licensed, had a lot of negative feedback about that process, about going through MEEC, about going through NARM. And, a lot of people don't feel safe in their community saying things like that. So it was interesting to hear that perspective as well.
Wow. Yeah. How many people went to that, do you think?
For the skills portion, we had about 150, and then an additional probably close to 100 came at the start of the conference. So I would say at the height of it, there was probably about 250 people.
Wow. What a great turnout.
With all of the same, not same, but similar kind of underlying experiences of feeling, even the students feeling some of them had really great preceptors, but a lot of the students that were saying they've had a preceptor experience where they felt like they weren't being given knowledge, or that was being hoarded from them, or if they were going through the licensing process through NARM, stories about people's preceptors not signing off on their paperwork, or withholding signatures, or with, and it was just it was crazy to listen to and to hear just kind of that competitiveness, because there's this attitude, and I think it's in midwifery in general and in birth work in general, that there's not enough women to go around. It's crazy. Yeah. There's such an underlying, at least where I am, not with everybody, but with some people, you can feel there's this kind of underlying tension. I can't support you, because if I do, then there won't be enough clients for me. And it's just kind of weird to think about, because there's so many people that need birth support, and there's so many people that need whatever you're offering, that the idea that supporting somebody would somehow diminish your own value is bizarre. But it's seems to be a thing that's pretty common everywhere.
Yeah, it's so prevalent that, the competitiveness is so prevalent in our society. People want to crap all over capitalism. I'm not one of those. And
I know,
me neither. To me, it's not a capitalism problem. It's, I think it's that sister wound. It comes down to all of that. It's not the patriarchy necessarily, which I think patriarchy stuff and, the greater societal function that is heavily masculine that does aggravate the problem. But women make up half of the population.
Yeah.
If we all come together and stop playing ball in a way that none of us like, we could change that crap real quick. Mm-hmm. But we mm-hmm. all get so caught up in these, we're just all, so many of us acting out of these wounds of trying to be impressive, of trying to be good enough to, yeah, I think impressive is the right word, like to be impressive. I definitely fall into that. Mm-hmm. I have my people that like, you know, past mentors and people that I really revere, that I would love for them to look at me and be like, wow, you're real cool. I think you're mm-hmm. super cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't yep. happen, it sucks. And like, are we all, part of the funny thing is like, is this really even a sister wound, or is it like a mama issues, daddy
issues?
I don't
know.
You know, because yeah. if we're, you know, so, but all of that I think comes down to, like, this is getting like way into the weeds a little bit, but I think a lot of that comes down to the family unit. Like, we're so wounded as a family unit. Society does not support the family the way it is today. Mm. I was literally just talking about this with my husband, that like women, we survive the current social structures, the current like work life balance. Mm-hmm. We survive them. We are not thriving, women, because it's not made for us. We're not meant to be doing 9-to-5s. We're not meant to be co-opting to strangers our whole household, like mm-hmm. and that's so like, that's tradition, that's just sexist, whatever, people can think that, I guess, but to me it's like, this, I'm just looking at the patterns of the way when society was really thriving. And I do look at traditional cultures and traditional traditional cultures, and like how they're structured and things like that. And like when people have their place in the village and they work from those skill sets, and it's not like meant to be, I don't think it should be something that's like, you're only allowed to bake bread and, you know, mm-hmm. breastfeed babies or whatever. Like, no. But if we're working out of our skill sets, then mothers are really good at mothering. Fathers are really good at fathering. And, you know, we're not all like fighting each other. But today's society, we're constantly acting out of these wound spaces. And I think the female relationships, mothers and sisters, it's all wounded. And I think that's where a lot of this comes from, like we mm-hmm. the witch hunt and all of that stuff. But what if during the witch hunt, the actual witch hunts, you know, of recent past, like what if all of the women stood together and supported each other? Are they going to burn all the women? They're going to drown all the women? Really? No.
Yeah.
They're going to, because men are not by and large sadists. Like they, you know, like men are good people in our society also, but they take cues from each other and from us. And like when we are at each other's throats, well, we're the gateway for men. Women are the gateway into the world of women. So when the gatekeepers mm-hmm. or, you know, the gates there, the women that are saying, this is what womanhood is like, this is what, you know, the world of women is like, it's terrible, we hate them, you know, we need you to do something about it, well, they're going to act accordingly. So again, yeah. like it's a whole, oh my gosh, it's so like philosophical. And like, I'm like apparently in that mindset because I'm just like way off in the galaxies with my thinking right now. But
I think it's true. I mean, I think women are kind of just playing, like, and that's what we're seeing in, you know, birth work, is that we will never be able to be, midwifery as a profession and as a calling will never be the mainstream choice for people having babies, as long as we're fighting with each other, because we can't lift it up as a profession, because we're tearing each other down to the point where we can't organize ourselves enough to become like, this should be the mainstream. This should be the norm. This should be, you know, not, you know, like that was one of the things that they talked about at the conference is, you know, women should be, when someone gets pregnant, the question they should be asking is who am I going to choose as a midwife? Not who am I going to choose as an OB, or where am I going to go? What hospital am I going to go to? Like the normal question now is people ask, who's your OB? What hospital are you going to? And it would be amazing if we could change that mindset to where people are asking like, who is your midwife? Are you having your baby at home? Like that's the first question that people ask, but it will never get to that point as long as this wounding prevents us from recognizing that we need to come together to be able to lift ourselves up and to be able to bring awareness at that level so that people are seeing it on a large scale. But I just feel like constantly, it's like a game of Jenga. You get to the point where it's like your tower is so tall, but everything underneath it is so unstable that it never goes beyond a certain point before it falls.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we're seeing. And I think that was what was nice about going to this, is that there was a sense of sisterhood because there had been that idea of, this is a safe space and you're not being judged by other people here. We have all had shared experiences. Maybe not every single one of these things has happened to me, but some of these things have. So it was like being able to identify yourself with these other people instead of being like, you're different than me, you're opposite, you're other, you're obviously competition for me, you know?
Right.
And I think that goes into a lot too, is having boundaries. It's like, I feel like in midwifery, it's people are like, I have to have all the clients have to come to me. Mm-hmm. I have to be the most popular midwife. I have to be the most popular doula. And not, or I don't want to leave women hanging. Like, I feel like that's kind of, I've fallen into that pitfall too, where I'm like, I'm the only one in my area. And I say, no one's going to help these people. But at some point you have to say no, because you may not be the right person. Or if you don't say no, then you're not going to be safe for anyone, because you are spread so thin. And so I think that's kind of contributes to that competitiveness as well, is that idea that I have to be the be all end all for every single person that comes to me, and I can't say no to them. You know, that the fact that they've asked me for support, it's like an automatic yes. And so I think that steps into that boundary piece. It steps into ignoring, you know, our intuition. If somebody comes to you and says, you know, I want you to support me, and you get that sense that like, I don't think this is the right fit, like ignoring that, and then it, you know, becoming a disaster down the road. So I just feel like it's like, not only are we not honoring each other because there's so much competition, but we're really not honoring ourselves by being like, you know what, I only take one client a month, or I only take two, or whatever it is. I mean, if everybody did that, it would be so much easier to see that like, there still are so many women who have no support. I mean, it's crazy. And so there's plenty of work to go around, and it's just, it was very interesting, because all of the themes were kind of interwoven. It was like competitiveness amongst whether you're a CNM or a CPM or unlicensed, or what kind of school did you go to, or, you know, preceptors. It's like the whole preceptor student relationship is crazy, because it's like they're training these new midwives and almost seeing them as like, I'm training my own competition, which is crazy, you know, instead of building a network of people who you're like, this would be great, this person's super skilled, maybe I can use them as a backup, maybe, you know, obviously I can refer people to them if, you know, I don't want to take 20 clients a month, you know what I mean? It's like an automatic competitiveness. And they're not all preceptors are like that, but I heard a lot of stories from people who had really negative experiences with some of their, you know, mentors. And that just sets you up for burnout, because you have a horrible experience if you do, you know, any kind of apprenticeship, whether you're going for a license or not. But if you spend however many years, 2 years in an environment that's dysfunctional, then it just sets you up to be like, oh my gosh, I hate this profession. I can't even do this anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And the person that's supposed to be helping you along, like lifting you up, picking you up when you make those stumbles, and being a safety net for when you're still learning and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like that's dysfunctional. They end up being like predatorial or, you know, just with this giant ego trip, and mm-hmm. it's just them stroking their, I mean, yeah, I've heard way too many stories of mentors being abusive in all kinds mm-hmm. of ways. And then you have those wounded people breaking free finally, or they're breaking free and they're creating their own clientele or whatever. And a lot of the times I know, and it doesn't have to be this way every time for every situation, but a lot of times people are finding their clientele for their new practice through their mentor, or like just they met people along the way during their apprenticeship, and so those people are finding them again, kind of thing. But mm-hmm. then what if those people were not a good fit? Like, you know, like what if they were people that were not the kind of people that they would really have good chemistry with, but they're just kind of seeking, they're just, it's just like, oh, she was busy, so I guess I'll go to her student who's now practicing, you know, on her own. And then it's kind of this awkward like, well, you know, we weren't really a good vibe, but now I feel mm-hmm. obligated because I was there for her other one, and blah, 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 blah. And it just perpetuates the whole thing.
When people feeling like I need to build my practice, so I'll take anyone that comes to me.
Yeah. And
like, no matter what, like, no matter what's going on with them, whether it be like physically, emotionally, whether it's just like, you get a sense that you're not the right person for them. It's like that whole, you know, invalidating your, mm-hmm. your instincts and your intuition, because you're like, well, I need to build a practice and I need, you know, a client base. So I'm just going to take these people, even though in my heart, I know that this is probably not the right fit. And I think yeah. that's what kind of sets up, you know, negative experiences for everybody. Cause I feel like that energy really is there. And I
oh yeah, totally. Like
that tension really is there and people can feel it. And it's just, there are so many of these questions and so many of these underlying issues, and it's just it becomes so complex the more you think about it, and it just becomes overwhelming. It's like, where do you even start? You know, it's almost like there's all these things that have to happen at the same time for something to change, you know.
But this is what like baffles me though about the reality of what we're talking about, and then you have the reality of those conferences where mm-hmm. there's hundreds of people there mm-hmm. I mean several, you know, I was going to say decades. No, several women, like, I mean, even if it's just like 10, you mm-hmm. got 10 midwives all together, and they're, you know, one's a CPM and one's an LM and one's a this and one's a, you know, a CNM and one's unlicensed and one's underground. You know, you could have all these varieties of people. Mm-hmm. And they come together in that environment, and they all in solidarity hold space for each other. And yeah,
so why can't we like yeah, I've also replicate that this. Outside of that?
Right. So I'm like, I want to like crack the code almost. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? What is it? Is it just having this common ground? Like, is it just a foundational reset? Because everybody's going to this conference to learn together, basically. So I mean, that alone mm-hmm. is humbling. I'm going mm-hmm. here to learn things. So we're all going in humility mm-hmm. to this place. And I'm going here with these people that love birth and love their communities, and they love, you know, they're going here. They're coming here to love on themselves and love on their practice, and therefore love on their community. Right. Yes. So we've got humility, love. What else? Is that maybe it? Common ground.
And that
like
feeling of like non-judgment, you know, that somebody's not judging you, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing is like, I feel like everybody has this notion that, and some of it may be real and some of it may be imagined, but it's like this idea that people are watching your every move and, you know, out to get you, because maybe because you've had a bad experience yourself, or you've heard horror stories from people who have had bad experiences, and they are definitely out there. But I think that that's another thing too, is feeling like you can be authentic and you can make mistakes and you can ask for help without that coming back to bite you, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's funny. Like I have family members that, and I'm sure everybody does. So, well, everybody has family members who were around in the 1950s, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I have close family that kind of stereotypical dynamic of maintaining appearances and stuff. One of the things that my mom would always say to my sister and I growing up was perception is reality. So God forbid somebody thinks something of you.
Yes.
Period. And that influenced me greatly. And mm-hmm. I think there is some wisdom to that, but it's mostly it mostly is just a vehicle for letting everybody else dictate what you do with your life. But that was the environment she grew up in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just her family environment, it was the community environment.
Mm-hmm.
All the talking, and you know, we grew up in a small community, small agricultural community. Everybody knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so any little thing, you are being watched. I grew up being like, I couldn't get away with anything because someone was going to see what I was doing, and they were going to tell my Nana, who was going to tell my dad or tell my mom, or my Nana was going to tell me. Like, it just, everybody, you know, oh, that was this person's son. You know, so, and he, and my dad had to fight with some certain family members that gave his side of the family a bad name, and so he had to like overcome that, and there's all this like interwoven
crazy
stuff. But so we have this like that perception of everybody's watching you because everybody was, and mm-hmm. so it is, so again, there's a sense of wisdom and reality to that. But now even in small towns, but especially in like bigger areas or whatever, we've got social media. And if there's anything any of us have learned about social media or the interwebs, is mm-hmm. that if it ever shows up on the internet, it is there for all of eternity.
Forever.
And it doesn't matter how quickly you deleted it. Somebody will have found it. It can be found. It can be found. It all goes somewhere. There's always mm-hmm. databases and stuff like that backing everything up everywhere. So we are being watched. You know, mm-hmm. so we're all like, it sounds like, it makes me think we're all like insecure.
Oh yeah.
And out of our insecurity, we judge other people. And this fear and knowledge of there are eyes everywhere, we're constantly being watched, which is true but isn't true at the same time, because we do have a lot of privacy that we can allow ourselves, like
mm-hmm.
like who knows, do you know the name of all of my animals?
No.
Do you know how many acres I live on?
Mm-mm.
Do you know where those acres are, like
not specifically? Yeah. No.
So like there's a lot of privacy that we can afford ourselves, mm-hmm. as long as we don't freaking share every little detail of our lives on the internet. But So there is privacy, but what we do share, we feel, I know that for myself, I'm saying for myself, like, and I observed this, I feel, in lots of people, that we end up feeling really insecure about what we put out there. So then we put out the perfect stuff, or all of the wins, or the curated losses that, mm-hmm. you know, are somehow still a little bit of a win. And I'm talking about myself just the same, like, I don't put all of my losses out there because many of them are embarrassing,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want people to know about my, you know, losses and stuff. So there's that. But then where do we get over it? At what point do we get over it? Because everybody got over their judgment. They got over it to go when they went to that conference. There's a hundred, you know, over 100 people there. They all put aside their judgments of each other, and they were able to do that in a moment,
people you've never met in your life.
You people had compassion for each other. Mm-hmm. It sounds like I wasn't there, sadly, next time, but you know, there they was compassion. Yeah. And like, so then what So, and I'm sure there were people there that have insecurities. There had to have been. Right. So then what is it? Is it, you got to have courage to show up and be vulnerable with each other, to show up and
Yeah.
So
really is a big part of it, is that mutual. It's weird because it's like, how do you build a mutual trust so quickly in a group of people that don't know each other? Very interesting. It's like, especially like from the sociological perspective, it's like many of these people did know each other. You know, they had gone to the first conference that was held last year, but a lot of these people did not know each other. You know, I didn't know a lot of these people. And for a lot of people, this was their first time coming. And, you know, maybe they recognized people from their community, but still, I mean, you have a large group of people who, you know, don't know each other well. And it's like, it was a very interesting phenomenon where it was like, suddenly there was this mutual trust where people felt safe. And I don't know if that's because that was the way that the conference was structured, was it was like, it was set up to be a safe space. And that was the perspective that, or the sense that they wanted to convey, and it was successful. But it was just interesting because, I mean, there's people, you know, who I have known for years that I still don't trust that live in this town. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how. I'm sure there's probably somebody out there who's like a psychologist or sociologist who knows what this is, like why this happens. But
yeah, they're like screaming and they're listening to this.
Read my graduate thesis. But if you could just take that same solution, and then if every single one of those people then went back to their communities, and that's, you know, that was the message. It was like, take this back to your communities. Like when you precept students, like this is, you know, don't, you know, abuse them. Don't hold things back. Don't withhold that from them. Don't gatekeep them. And, you know, it was, when you go back to your community, remember that there are enough clients to go around. There is enough work to go around. There's more than enough work to go around. There's more than enough women everywhere that need someone that they can't find. But that's the question. It's like, you light this fire and then everybody has to take that, some of that flame with them, and then relight it again. So,
right.
But like, how do you keep the fire that started it all going, so that people can keep coming back to it and taking it with them wherever they go? Because you want it to spread. You don't want to move it. You want to keep it where it was and then spread it and make more. But
right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what needs to change. I think a lot of things need to change, but I think if we could just create that unity, then all of those things would change, because people would be in solidarity instead of competing with each other and feeling isolated. And it was interesting because, you know, I live in a community where I am fairly isolated. I don't have like a birth community. I can't go to like, I mean, there are birth worker meetups, but they're 90 miles away from me. Like, of course I would love to do that, but I can't drive 90 miles, you know, in the wintertime.
For some tea with a few people. Yeah.
Exactly. And even so, I mean, there's not a ton. So I definitely felt like I didn't have, you know, a community. And then, you know, I started meeting these people and I went to this conference. And it's like, oh my gosh, you feel like you're like, I am part of a community, and maybe they don't live where I live, but I do have support that I didn't realize I had. So I think some of it is just that, not being aware that, you know, you might have to reach outside of your physical location to find a community and to not feel isolated, which also helps with burnout. Because I feel like here in this area where it is so remote, and like where you live, that's part of the way, the reason that you burn out is because you're like, I don't want to drive 4 hours to every birth that I go to. I don't, you know, and that's the reality, and that's where we live, and that's part of choosing to do that work where we live. But it can be exhausting to feel like, not only am I doing this work by myself, but I'm isolated and I have no one to talk about it with. And I have no one to ask questions, and I have no one to just listen to me. You know, that's not, you know, I love my husband, but you need someone sometimes that has been in that space.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that some of it is just awareness, like knowing that you can go out there and find and build your own community, but it can be exhausting if you're already trying to do so many other things.
Yeah. But I just thought of like a support group with like for veterans. Like that, you know, many of these people have loving spouses and loving family members and stuff like that, but there's just they just gotta talk to people that have been in it and they understand. And that's what is required in birth work. I liken it's not exactly a perfect parallel, but I liken birth work to being in war for, you know, for men. I say specifically because women get the privilege of in the modern world, women can be in war also and birth, but men don't get to birth children and be in war. They just get to be in war if they're going to do that. But I'm kind of like, let's you know, take things back to kind of primitive, you know, primitive mindset where men go to war and women are the homemakers. And I don't mean Stepford Wives homemaker, but I mean like we're holding down the village. We are keeping the village going while the men are at war, kind of that idea. Men, you were talking about like these quick these like hyperdrive paths to trusting other individuals and stuff. And I think I often think of veterans like soldiers in a unit together. These units are put together of people from all over the place, like wildly different backgrounds. They don't know anything about each other. They go through boot camp together, and they're, you know, they well, they might go through boot camp together, but the point is they go through the similar experiences, and then they're thrown together. They're thrown into the shit together. You know, the handful of men all together. And those the brotherhood that's formed from those things, it's so deep and strong. And like there may it might not even be something like they might not even end up living in the same area together. Like they'll part ways potentially. But what I've heard, you know, is that if one of their buddies, you know, reaches out at any point in you know, the rest of their lives, at any point, it's instantly like, this is my guy, you know, this is my, I trust this guy, this is my brother. And so what is it about those bonds? Because those are quick, those are hyperdrive pathways too. It's in being in the shit together. It's doing the work together and having those experiences that tap into the core of one's self. Which side note is why I think fathers should be somewhere very close to the birth when it's happened, when their child is being born, because I think the bonds that can form between the two of them, like, are very important, you know, very
Oh,
strong, very
absolutely.
like, because we're not talking about like, oh, we bought some ice cream together. We're talking about like deep, deep human experiences, death, life, you know, deep, I can't think of another way of explaining it, but like very deep human experiences being experienced together with someone else. Like those things deeply affect our bonds. And you know, I'm sure there's chemistry and all kinds of like fancy science that can tell us all about why that is and stuff like that. But the fact of the matter is that it happens. And this is what birth workers should all be bonding over. But I wonder if part of the disruption is how birth is going these days. Because you're not necessarily having like, yes, a person is being born and there's a level of deep human experience that can't be bypassed, but are a lot of the mechanisms like we're distracted in the birth space, we're focusing on all these other things, you know, or I gotta get that number. I have to mark this down. I have to remember that. And oh, I need to, you know, my preceptor told me to do a check, even though she told me no. And so there's distraction that, you know, like the trauma mm-hmm. and like distractions in those ways. But if we could just, if all of us could focus on the birth, you know, would we all be able to bond better together? Like it's, you know, question. Like, yeah, like it's, I mean, there's almost no, like so much of what we're saying is rhetorical right now, but
well, I mean, there is some truth to it though. Like, especially in the hospital system, like we've had so many technological advances, you know, that are, you know, like it, like computer charting and, you know, there's a computer in every room. And so, you know, of course there's all these things that it reminds you to document this at this time and this at this time. But we had so many of those, like every staff meeting I've ever been to, every hospital training I've ever been to, it's like they have to reteach you how to pay attention to the person that you're taking care of. They're like, don't just sit in their room and chart and look at the computer. Like, look, talk, like they had to remind you, like, you have to look at this person. You have to talk to them. Like, don't make them feel like you're not paying attention to them, because that's what it looks like. And that's what's perceived, is when you sit in a room, like at a doctor's appointment or something like that, and they spend the whole time asking you questions, but typing them into a computer and looking at a screen, you're like, well, this person obviously distracted. They're not really paying attention to what I'm saying. And so basically the hospital had to like reteach staff how to work around the technology that had been implemented to make all of our jobs easier. They were like, oh, well, now we're not paying attention to the people we're taking care of anymore, because we are so reliant on this technology to do all of the things that we're supposed to do and literally check all of the boxes we're supposed to check. Like, you know, we were forgetting that there was a person that was giving us the information. And so there is a lot of distraction, and it's not just in the set birth. I think what the way we birth right now is mirroring kind of like what society has said is normal. And like, this is our life now. You know, it's like everything is very technologically focused. Everybody is distracted. Everybody is always looking at their phone, always looking at their computer, always looking at a TV screen. And, and it's just, it has dehumanized the human experience in general. So of course birth has become dehumanized in the same way that, like, it's so easy to be distracted from like the life that you're living and from the moment that you're living, because you're constantly looking at something else to be distracted. And so, I mean, but it was hilarious. We had to go to trainings to be, when they were like, now make sure that you look at your patient and talk to your patient. Like, look at this other person who is obviously suffering and pay attention to them. It was just very interesting. And
jeez Louise,
maybe that's kind of the same sort of situation, as it's like these people come to this conference, you know, and some of them have great experiences and some of them don't. But regardless, it's like you're in the space where you have to look at someone and you have to talk to someone. And it's like some of these people are suffering. Some of these people have had horrible experiences. And, you know, you're in a space where you are, you know, talking to them and listening to them talk, and suddenly you're humanizing people again. You know, oh my God, these are all people.
Yeah,
we're all people together. Yeah. And I don't know if that's what it is. It's like you can't be distracted because you're in a space where there are no distractions. So out of respect, you're going to listen to what this person says, and then we're going to invite everybody else who's had that experience to then go stand with this person in the middle of the circle, you know? And it was like, wow, that's such a simple, it's seemingly so simple, but you're inviting people to be vulnerable. And then you're inviting people to be like, hey, I see you as a person and I have shared that experience with you. And now we have this bond.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if
we should walk around our communities and make people stand in a circle and like talk.
Yeah.
It was very effective and it was very powerful. I mean, there were some people that went out there and talked, and like two or three people came out because maybe they had something very specific, but it was always translated into, like, even if they told a very specific story, when people were invited to go stand with them, it was like, have you had this experience, or perhaps even this experience, or, you know, so it was like, there are elements that all of us have had. I mean, there were times where every single person went and stood in the middle of the room, and it was like, I feel like there's something to that, that was that you just can't really replicate in a just everyday life, unless we do it ourselves, but in a large group, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I can now take that, and like when I listen to people talk, I can try to you know, validate their experience. I can try to relate, put myself in their shoes or find some way that I can relate to them. But unless everyone is doing it, that piece is lost. That powerful piece of, oh my gosh, we are all coming from the same place. We are all going in the same direction. We all want the same thing. You know, how can we make that happen?
Yeah. That's the big trick. It's like, cause the midwives that are here in my community, I don't know if any of them went to that conference, but they might have. And, you know, let's say I went to the conference and then I came back and no one from my community went to the conference. And so I'm coming back with this great, mountaintop experience. That's what in my former life as a Christian, that was like what we all called it when everybody would go to like church camp, go to like Bible camp, and then they'd have this great experience and then go back home. So mountaintop experience. And then you come back and they're not on the same page. So then now what? And I right now there's so much going on in my little world over here that I'm like, I'm really feeling the autumn vibes, the autumn storms. And it sounds like from what I've heard from so many different people that's like, oh my gosh, this season is like pounding me back. I'm like in a washing machine, just being freaking slammed back and forth in the wind. There's no wind in my washing machine, but you get what I'm saying. So I know it's not just me, but I'm feeling like I'm at this place where I almost just don't feel like I have time for all the BS anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I just like, you know what, lady, you know, talking to figurative, that, you know, let me just pretend that I'm talking to the midwife that hates my freaking guts here. You know, like I almost wish I could tell her, like, you know what, I don't care. Like, I don't care. You don't like me. Okay. Like, you know what? We're both midwives. Get over it. Like I'm going to do what I'm going to do. It's like that, that meme where I can't remember exactly who it even is in the meme, but it's like, basically he's like, yeah, well, I decided to move on, live my life anyway, or whatever. I'm sure you could think of.
Oh yeah. It was Russell Brand, wasn't it?
I think so. Maybe. Yeah. I
thought about doing like that, but then I went on and lived my life anyhow or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly. Who it was.
Yeah. And that's like where I'm at right now. And I just think like, what if we disarmed our enemies and not by forcefully, you know, going and controlling what they're doing, but what if we just like what weapons do other people have over us? Okay, they've got government. That's fair. The government's big and scary. Okay. I don't know. I'm almost just like, man, but the government sucks. And at some point we all have to
they're very ineffective at like doing anything efficiently, which is
doing anything. Doing anything well. So even like persecuting people, like it's laziness and, you know, sometimes it can be vicious and stuff like that. But what's important, that the government likes me? No, I don't care. Like, I'm so done with all that. Okay, so then that's one weapon out the window. So what else do these people have against me? She can spread rumors about me. Okay, well, I can't do anything about that. So I might as well just not care. You know? And then that might, you know, maybe that hurts my clientele. Okay, what clientele would it hurt? Only clientele that doesn't know me.
Or that maybe you don't want those clients anyways. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
So that's the thing. It goes back to what you were saying too, is, you know, I just lost my train of thought. Something that you said reminded me of what we were talking about.
What we're doing, like, because
of those insecurities, it's like,
yeah.
The reason it's like caring if someone likes you, you know, that goes back to that whole thing of like, I need everyone to I need all the clients to come to me. I need all of the mm-hmm. pregnant yeah. women to come to me. I need, like, why do you need that? Like, why would you, you know, that it's the kind of that same, that insecurity that they feel then putting that on you. And it's like, if you don't have that same insecurity, then yeah, it doesn't hurt you to be like, well, I don't need every single person to want yeah. my support. I don't need every single person to want to be my friend. Because right. I'm not the right type. I'm not right for every single person. I'm not right for every single mother. I'm not right for every, you know, I'm not friends with every single person I meet. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I
don't have to. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make them lame people necessarily. And it doesn't make me a lame person. Just if I don't have all, everybody in my community doesn't love my guts, like love my guts. That's not anyway. But yeah, like it's, we, so then I think it comes back to being brave, you know, we got to have the courage to just like do what we're doing anyway, in the face of all of this stuff, because, and that's kind of what I was getting at with like, well, what do you, you know, take their weapons away, like get rid of the enemy's weapons, you know? So if this person's my enemy, they're wielding the government, they're wielding rumors, they're wielding, you know, I don't know, something else, like potentially, I don't know, money, I guess, like we're talking about clientele, then, you know, the government, you deal with that, however you're going to deal with it. The rumors, well, that can be fixed. That can be remedied really easily. You go and you meet your community, you go and be a part of the community. And so when someone's like, hey, so-and-so, and this applies strongly in rural communities like ours, like if they say, hey, you know, Jackie, she wears two left shoes and mismatched socks, ooh, and then the person that hears that is like, no, Jackie wears normal freaking shoes and normal socks, and I know that because I go hang out with her on Tuesdays, like, so that's an easy, so then, you know, mm-hmm. that's gone. And then the clientele thing is like, is being okay with and understanding the very real truth of not everybody is going to hire you anyway. Not mm-hmm. only do we not have the capacity to be hired by everybody, but like, it's not going to happen. People are not going to like me. Maybe they don't like, you know, 30 something midwives. They want somebody who's like 60 years old or more or something like that. I think that's totally valid. Like mm-hmm. that's because whatever's going to make you more comfortable, you know, so it just, yeah, this lie that there's not enough to go around, like what you were saying earlier,
the scarcity thing.
Yeah.
Well, and, I think and another thing that people said a lot was, you know, they don't, even licensed midwives are afraid of going to jail.
Right. Yeah. There's no safety. That's like the whole government thing. There is no safety in this work. There's no safety as a doctor. That's why they've got so many freaking, you got insurance and you got liability and you have mm-hmm. all these rules and stuff. There's no safety in this work. So what are we so, we're so.
Well, that's, we should be each other's safety. We shouldn't be afraid of our colleagues. We right. shouldn't be afraid of, I mean, because it feels yeah. to me like that's where a lot of this comes from is, you know, you have midwives that are genuinely just like, afraid of practicing in their community because they're afraid of going to jail and they're afraid of losing their own families, even yeah. if they are doing everything that they're supposed to be doing, you right. know, supposed to be doing, like there's still this huge fear of, you know, being thrown in jail and being taken from their families and, or having to go through these really huge, costly court battles because either they've done it themselves or somebody they know has, like, even with like all of the licensure and everything that they're, you know, doing that's by the book, many of them have still been sued. Many of them have still been investigated. Right. I mean, it's just like,
yeah,
of course they're terrified. It's crazy. It's like, even when you're playing yeah. by the rules, you're still, it's almost like you feel like someone could turn on you at any moment. It's
yeah.
like a Stockholm syndrome thing where you're like,
Yeah, I almost think that it's the more rules you try to follow, the scarier it is, to be honest. Like, that's my thought, is that the more you're like, I'm following the rules, look at me following all the rules, mm-hmm. like there, then the second that you bend a mm-hmm. rule there, then they'll be on you like wolves on blood. Like, it just, you know, but
When you look at, but like, that's the why ways I say that we got it continuing to be taken away from, like, you go and you follow the rules and you get your license, and then suddenly now licensed midwives in California can't do breech birth anymore. And when you try to advocate, you try to change it, they're like, oh, let's talk about VBAC too. And you're like, let's not talk about VBAC. Please don't take that from us. It's like, it's like this constant, consistent narrowing and like penning in of midwifery. And we're letting that happen regardless of what kind of midwife you are, whether you're licensed or not. We as a profession are letting this happen because we can't get over ourselves to the point where we can then get together and be like, there are enough of us to be like, we're not, you can't take these away, these things away from us. Like, you can't, we're, you know, we're not going to operate under the medical board anymore. Like most, there's only like three or four states that have independent midwifery boards for licensed midwives. The rest of them are run by physicians. It's like, that's nuts. But like, doesn't anybody see how crazy this all is? It's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And again, we all should be bonding over this, like, this, I don't want to get into this, but it's a really good example. Because of the recent events, the Jewish community has banded together like never before in recent history. Like, we're all like, well, they hate our guts, we might as well all love each other. And that's what we should be doing in midwifery.
Well, the same thing happened after 9/11. Suddenly it was like, that was the highest enlistment into the voluntary enlistment in the military, because we don't, obviously we didn't have the draft anymore, but there was like, that was like the highest incidences of like patriotism nationwide. It was like
everybody had an American flag on their front door. It didn't matter at all, like anything. It didn't matter your political affiliations, it didn't matter anything. We were all Americans, we all came together and warmed together. We're all
stronger together. And I feel like midwives could be doing that, but I don't know if it's partly the type of people that become midwives are used to feeling like they have to work on their own and shoulder all of that. And so part of it is that, like, I'm just going to do it all and do it all and do it all until I die, basically, until I kill myself and burn myself out. Or if it's just that, I don't know if it's just, maybe this is a stereotype and I don't mean it to be, but like, midwives as like a group are not very good at like organizing ourselves. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Like, but this, it would be a perfect opportunity. I mean, it's like, for 200 years, it's just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. And learning midwifery history is part of any midwifery curriculum, regardless of where you go to school. I mean, regardless of the program, I mean, we all know why it's like this, but like, we want it to change. Everybody does. You ask any midwife and they want it, you know, most of them want it to change. But nobody's figured out the magic combination to make like really widespread change, really truly widespread change. And it's just crazy to me, because like you said, like the Jewish community is like in that, it's a very similar experience. It's like, we have become this group that has been completely ostracized, completely marginalized, completely demonized, completely whatever, but we're not going to do that to each other. We're not going to, we're not going to do that from the inside. We're not going to feed into that and self-destruct. But I feel like that's exactly what midwives are doing. Is it's like, not only did we get delegitimized by the, you know, American Medical Association and by all of, you know, so, but we're also delegitimizing each other. So it's coming from the inside and the outside. It's like, we've internalized this and now we're projecting it out onto each other. And now it's like, we're doing half that work for them now.
Stay tuned for part two of this conversation. Thanks for joining me here. Remember to subscribe, write a review, and check out the show notes for other ways to connect. Nothing on this podcast is medical or legal advice. By engaging with this content, you agree to take full responsibility for your own experiences. Everything in this podcast is property of Prudence Ministries, a private healing association.